Welcome everybody to the Alt Accountant Podcast. I'm here with my friend and colleague, Jenny Whitehouse, who actually I told her to come on the podcast so we can talk about her book. Her book is called How to Make Boring Stuff Interesting. 52 ways to make boring stuff interesting. So Jenny, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Hector. Well, it's actually called How to Make a Boring Subject Interesting.
That one, yeah. Boring subject.
Yeah, and 52 ways even a nerd can be heard. And even a nerd can be heard is my business name. So it's my belief and my passion that, you know, us nerds have a difficult time connecting with non-nerds, normal people. And so, and also as a CPA, you know, Hector, we go to all kinds of boring CPE to get our credits and to get training. And it's just awful, the people who present and communicate information. So I had a real passion coming out of being a partner in a CPA firm to do something about that. So I went to technology, and then I decided I needed to write a book about subject matter and how to take the stuff that we communicate, which, let's face it, all of it's boring. And we got to get it, the message out to people who need to understand it and apply it. So if we can make it not boring, maybe we can have an impact with our clients and others.
And part of the context is that you speak in main stages, and that's why it's so important to make your stuff interesting. But to the folks listening to the podcast or watching the Facebook Live video, if they don't speak on a main stage, is this stuff also relevant to them?
Well, I wrote the book before I was on a main stage. I wrote the book when I was trying to build a connection with clients, and I really discovered the power of making connection when I was out doing small business accounting software consulting. I was working in a CPA firm in Atlanta. I was doing Peachtree implementations and working with small business. And I realized the power of breaking down the fear so they could understand what was going on with their numbers and their books and their software and their technology and all of that. So it really came from that, from really seeing how important it was for us to be understood and for us to help people that we're working with not be afraid of some of these concepts. So it started from that, but it's really in every day-to-day interaction, we're talking about boring stuff. Every time we talk to a client, every time we write an email, every time we try to educate anybody about anything, we have this barrier of not only boring, but also scary that we have to overcome. And so that's what drove me to do this. It was really my own desire to help the profession have more value that led me to write the book. And it took me a while to get there, but I did it.
And let's be clear, the stuff that we talk about is not boring because it's accounting. It's boring because it's not what the other person does for a living. Correct?
That's right. Any topic, you know, can be boring if there's no context for whoever you're talking to. So, you know, the most fascinating thing in the world might be, you know, insect larvae to somebody who spent their life studying it. But when they go into 5 hours of description to somebody who has no clue or no connection to that, it becomes extremely boring. And so, no, the stuff we do is not boring. The work we do is not boring. But when we communicate about it, we tend to deliver it in a boring way. And that's the opportunity to find a different way to put a wrapper around it so that we can make people relate to it.
So if you don't mind, let's go through some examples. So you are, and I'll take advantage and make a bit of introduction. You are a CPA that has a bookkeeping practice, and you work for a CPA firm as well. Yeah. Let's call it part-time. And the other part-time, you're a public speaker, consultant, and speak to large crowds, both accounting and non-accounting folks, correct?
Right. Accounting and tech and then business folks, yeah.
Right. But you speak about accounting for the most part or financial fundamentals.
I'm speaking about topics that are relevant to accountants and tech folks. So it's a lot of it is around communication, but I'm talking about applications. I have a subject that I deliver called Communicating Financial Information to Non-Financial People. I bring in a lot of technology to help us make that communication bridge. But it's all related to adding more value and making more impact and remaining relevant as a profession.
Okay. And when you, let's say, for example, we're speaking in public.
Yep.
We have a couple of components. We have yourself, like so it would be your body language,
presence.
Your look, your presence.
Yep.
It would be the actual content of your voice and the inflection of the words and the actual stuff that's coming out of your mouth. Yep. And also the environment, which could be a combination of how you use and work the stage and the PowerPoint presentation behind you, right?
That's right.
Are there any more components to kind of break down?
The most critical component is the connection to the audience. It's your understanding of what it is that matters to them and then framing that presentation around that. To me, that's the most important. And we spend a lot of time in our own minds about thinking about how we look and where we stand and how we hold our hands and all that stuff and what we put on the PowerPoint. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is what we say and how it connects, the relevance and the context of that information for that audience. And that's where I spend most of my time when I'm getting ready to speak. Or even talk to, you know, a one-on-one meeting with a CEO. What is it that they care about? You know, I worry about GAAP. Am I following the rules? The financial statements underlined twice where they need to be and, you know, the rows and columns lined up and all that stuff. They could care less. They want to know, what does this mean and what do I need to do about it? And so that's how I frame that one-on-one meeting. So the same concepts that matter when you're on a big stage or a little stage matter when you're across the table from somebody who needs to understand what you're talking about.
I was going to say, how important is it the first 30 seconds or the first minute for this? Because if you're speaking somewhere and people know who you are and they know that you get to the point and you know, and they know the end of your story is great.
Yeah.
That group is easy. But what about the people that don't know who the heck you are or they're meeting you for the first time? Tell me about the first minute, the first 30 seconds.
The initial impression, what you have to convey in that initial meeting is trust, especially in our profession. And you convey that by actually listening, not speaking first, but listening, giving them the opportunity to communicate before you jump in with all of your vast and unlimited knowledge. So one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing in our CPA firm is asking questions and not assuming that we know the answer or not trying to share everything that we know until we've had a chance to really understand what the person we're meeting with needs to know or is struggling with or cares about. So to me, that's the most important thing. And I think as accountants, we're really good at listening. I think we can leverage that better than we are doing most of the time.
But we get a client referral and we meet with them one-on-one and we have that big pressure to make a good impression. And you're saying that you make a good impression by listening. How do you make that transition from, hey, you're here, Hector, thanks for coming. You know, what can you do for us to like, okay, let me just listen. What are some techniques to make that?
Well, we have some tools that we use. We have a particular methodology that we use. It comes from Mentor Plus. It teaches us how to be consultants. And it's like a bingo card where we ask them a bunch of questions about different areas of their business. And we start off by saying, you know, we just want to learn about your business because before we can help you with anything, we need to know why you're doing this business. It's the Simon Sinek why is one of the things that we start with. Why are you in this wine business, in my case, for most of our clients? And then what's happening in your areas of the financial aspects of your business and the customer aspects, the operations, the people side, and then in your end in mind. And it's called a scope methodology. Again, it's a Mentor Plus approach that we use. But we also ask them what works, what doesn't work, and then what are you trying to achieve in each of those five areas of the business? So that asking as the first step changes the whole expectation for any client we've ever met with. They've never had somebody sit down and ask about those kinds of things before they just dive into solving the problem, which is our inclination. We're problem solvers. And so what's wrong? And well, here's your answer. Instead of doing that, let's step back, let them really unravel their story. And then let's talk about, you know, what opportunities there are for us to work together in a bigger way.
So let's do some role playing. Own, because I know your focus is wineries. You love working with wineries and you actually have a place in Napa Valley just so you can serve your clients out there, right?
That's right.
Has nothing to do with drinking the wine or hanging out in Napa.
Nothing to do with enjoying beverages. No, nothing wrong with that.
It's all a sacrifice for the greater good.
Sacrifice.
Yeah. So I own a winery. I came up with some money. I'm a tech guy and I bought somebody's winery. Their accountant retired and somebody told me, talk to Jenny. She's great. She'll help you. So you come over or we do a Zoom call like this. And I say, Jenny, I'm here because I need a new accountant. You know, what do you think you can do for me? How much do you charge for services? Let's get started. You know, make the transition.
So Hector, before I can jump into all that, which I'm sure we can help you, I want to find out more about you. Tell me about the business. And here's this, I have this little grid for you that we're going to walk through. I want you to give me more of a perspective across what's happening in your business. The first question I asked for you is, why are you doing this, Hector? Why do you have a winery? You could have done anything with your with your money. This is a very difficult business to go into. Tell me why a winery? Why does this matter to you? So I can really understand what you're trying to accomplish. And then we'll talk more about some of the other detail.
Sure. I have a really good friend that owns a winery in Spain, and he makes a great living. And I really didn't know what to do with the money, so I invested in here. And that's really why I think it sounds and looks like a profitable business, which I'm yet to determine.
Let me just tell you now, Hector, if you're going into wine for profit, this is the last place I would advise you to go. So most people who are in the wine industry are doing this because they have a passion. They want to have a connection to the earth, or they want to build a legacy, or there's some deeper heart-centered driver that leads them to come into this difficult industry, especially in a place like Napa Valley, where it's a really high cost of entry. It's a 5-year wait until your investment in the vineyard produces wine. So there must be something else that's making you have enough passion to come out here and you know, take over this winery. So give me a little bit more, Hector.
Yeah, deeper. Yeah, so back home, I used to go to a lot of restaurants, and they always offered me wine. I never really understood all the wines that they sold, and they have wines from $5 to $10,000. And I said, one day I'm going to get into this business, and I want to sell to restaurants. So that's kind of, that was the reason why I got into it.
Well, that's great. And again, I want to tell you that's really wise, that there's a passion there for the product. But I just want to advise you that it is a difficult industry to go in. We actually have all the aspects of business that you could possibly encounter rolled into this industry. We have manufacturing, we have farming, we have direct wholesale sales, and we have retail sales going on. So you're producing, farming, manufacturing, selling. There's a lot of aspects to being profitable and financially successful. But sometimes that's not the main goal. And it sounds like your goal is to fulfill a passion that you've had. So we can certainly help you get there. Now let's back up and look across the existing departments of your company, the one that you acquired, and see what's working, what's not working, and ideally what you'd want to see across each of those areas of the business. So I can then align everything that I do to support you in achieving those objectives. Otherwise, I'm just wasting your time if I'm telling you what to do without full perspective.
Okay. And so I get an idea, because I'm building my budgeting here. You know, I kept all the employees that worked under the old owner. They're the ones that have all that passion for the ground and all that stuff. I'm going to be the numbers person. I'm going to be the numbers person. I'm going to be the one trying to sell it to other restaurants.
So
I kind of want that to be my goal. I want to develop the brand. I'm kind of a branding guy, so I want to develop the brand. I just need someone that can help me. Everything you mentioned, you know, the logistics, the profitability. I want someone that can advise me on that. And obviously, I want to pay as little taxes as possible in the process. Yeah. In the process. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. And I wanted to get an idea how much your services were, more or less, so I understand what my budget looks like for an accountant.
Well, we're not cheap. We specialize in the wine industry. So depending on what you need, we would have to look at your complete picture and give you a quote. But I still don't have enough information. So when you say on the financial side, Hector, what matters to you? Cash, profit, long-term growth? Is your objective to grow this and sell it? Is this objective to build a family legacy? What are we trying to accomplish? And then how do your financial goals support that?
Interesting. I never thought of it that way. I kind of only thought about growing it. Right. And building a brand and selling it all over the U.S.
Yeah.
And once I sell it to the U.S., I want to sell it to a big wine label that knows how to make all the economies of scale work better. So I got like a 5-year plan
to grow it and sell it.
To grow it. I want to go from $1 million in sales, 1.2 that we have now, to 10 million, and then I want to sell it. That's my goal.
So one of the first things that I think we would help you with is to create a budget and a forecast, because what you're going to run into in this industry is cash flow issues, because it's a cash intensive, capital intensive business. So do you have your own vineyard, or are you going to be farming and manufacturing? Do you have a production facility?
Yeah, we just bought this bottling plant, and we buy all the raw materials. I don't know what the term is from the local growers here in Napa.
Yeah. So that's good. You may not have to deal with the farming aspects of the business, but you're going to have to figure out how to produce it effectively and then get it to market. So what I suggest we do, Hector, is have another meeting where we sit down and talk about, you know, some of the more details, and then we talk about building a five-year plan, and then we can help you with all the aspects of that. Getting your team aligned to support your financial objectives, defining what your critical success factors are going to be, and then designing KPIs and measures to work with you. So we can work with you a bunch of different ways. We can just create a forecast and then let you go forth and apply it. We can help you month to month, monitor and manage what you're doing. We can train your teams. We have all sorts of skills, but again, I need to get clear on exactly what your top priority is and where we can add the most value, and then we can talk money. But until then, and I'm wasting your time by trying to solve a problem that I don't fully understand.
Okay. What's the next step to get you to that?
Yeah, so let's work through this grid. I'm going to fill out all the aspects of the business. I'd like love to come just sit down at your office and have you walk me through the business so I can see what's going on there and what's working. And then come back with a quote for you. Look at your accounting and some of your systems to make sure that you've got everything flowing in the right way. And then we can talk about where we can provide the best value for you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Okay.
Okay. All right. So I want to break down. I took a couple of notes here. I know this was on the spot. We're doing it live.
Yeah. You
know, obviously,
yeah.
You're trying to cram a lot of information into one. So I have a couple of questions for you. One is you immediately discouraged the profitability aspect of the business,
or it's true.
Right. Okay. So you think that just being transparent is more valuable than just encouraging the person saying, yeah, we might be able to get there. You think that that level of,
I'm going to be straight with you. I want you to understand, because it is real. It really is an extremely difficult industry and a very long-term play. So if you're buying in for fast money, and you've already bought it, so at this point, you've already made the commitment, but I want to make sure that you understand that it's going to require some work on the financial side to make it profitable. And I don't know at what phase you bought into the business. It could already be profitable. If the brand is well-known and already established, then you're buying into something that's relatively easy. But if you've got a brand that's going nowhere, and you've got to rejuvenate it. So you see how, I mean, I can't just jump in there and tell you I'm going to charge you this for your financial statements.
Of course.
And to me, that's the easy part.
Right.
But it's really adding value that we want to do. And that's where the communication stuff comes into play. I want to keep it pull. And you want me to, and depending on your behavioral style, which is another thing that we do, we study that in people.
Right.
If you're a Heidi and you just want me to give you the answer and tell you how much, you're going to be frustrated by me pushing you back to get more and more details. But we may not be the right fit. If you just want cheap and cheerful, we may not be the right firm. And I want you to know that right up front.
Now
we're going to be more than just, you know, quick and dirty.
Right. And that initial pushback, not really pushback, but that initial sort of reality check that you gave.
Yeah.
Was it because you detected from my body language that I would be open for that, or you do it regardless?
Well, I just feel like that's something that you need to know. I'm trying to read you and I'm also sensing your frustration. So I'm trying to adapt as we go.
Okay, that's
good. But it's something that has to be set down immediately, that the profit thing is it's a long-term play.
Long-term play. Okay.
And so if you're expecting me to do miracles, it's not going to happen. So I want to make sure that you understand what I'm capable of doing.
So if I immediately say, it doesn't sound like you're a person that's going to help me be profitable because you're kind of pessimistic, you're okay with that.
I'm okay with that. We want the right fit. I'm okay with that at all, everything that I do. I'm who I am, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I want you to know that. That's one of my goals in that meeting.
Right.
To
okay.
Make sure we're right for each other.
Now
Steve,
the other
wants to be unhappy with that.
The other aspect that I noticed is you made it two meetings. You didn't try to close anything on that one meeting. Is there any logic on that, or was it reason for that?
Well, I think one of the things that we try to do is rush to pricing, and I think we do ourselves a disservice. So if somebody wants me to commit to a price up front, then I say, okay, I'll do a needs analysis engagement for, you know, a couple thousand. I'll come out and study what you got and give you a recommendation, and then we'll set up a monthly fee or whatever it is. I do that on bookkeeping too. I won't commit until I know what I'm dealing with. How can you? So I'll have an initial meeting to find out if we're in alignment in terms of goals. And then I'll ask for some detail. I'm going to see your last year's tax return. I'm going to see your financials. I want access to your QuickBooks Online or whatever you're using. I want, you know, I want to see some stuff, and I want to come out there. If it's in wine country, I want to go see what you're doing. So I really understand, oh, you got this, and you got this tasting room, and you got this, or you don't have a tasting room. It's all online. So yeah, I want to do some more in depth before I ever go there. I also want to convince you that I'm offering value before you make me set a price, and then you go, yuck, that's too much or whatever. So I have to establish that there's a value relationship already.
And a question on going out there. So you're saying, I want to go out there. I want to see your tasting room, whatever.
Yeah.
So is there a price tag on that? Do you require payment up front?
No, not yet. No, okay. I'm still building the...
But you did underwrite the business like before to make sure that you're not wasting your time with someone that can't afford you.
As much as you can. Yeah. And if they're in the wine industry, they're, you know, depending on what they are, you can look at their wine bottle prices and figure out whether they have some cash, if they can afford the kind of stuff that we're doing. I mean, you can tell.
That's interesting.
If the brand is out, you have a sense for that.
So you look at how much they're charging for their wine, and that gives you an idea more or less.
Well, it tells you what kind of a, you know, who they're appealing to. If they're in a luxury audience, then they're going to want to have a luxury delivery system in their business. They're going to have operations that flow seamlessly. That dictates a lot of stuff versus, you know, high volume business that has a lot of different focus.
Well, so, like Yellowtail, for example. Yellowtail is a high volume business.
Yeah, but very different focus. How many bottles can we move?
Right. But is that a client you wouldn't take? I mean, I'm sure you would like a client.
Well, they're huge. That's not our focus.
Right.
It's boutique estate wineries and smaller wineries. That's where we have the fun. And we have 500 of those. So we don't need to go to, you know, Yellowtail. The biggies. Okay. They're a different market, different kind of company. So this is the fun one where we can help people make an impact on their business.
Do you do any, I'm curious more about the industry itself. Do you do a research in like, where are they selling now? Like where do you have established points of distribution? Is that something that matters?
Well, that's
to
the
you?
Kind of stuff that we would ask. We would find out, depending on, again, what they're trying to do and where they want us to be involved. If they're trying to drive more sales, then we'd go look at the channel structure. How much of your wine goes retail? How much is wholesale? What's your margin? You know, what SKU sell? We can talk about all that stuff. Right. But you really sort of have to get a perspective. But it's really when we're looking at financial and tax stuff, there's some specific things that are going to impact what we can provide and deliver and how costly it will be for us to deliver that. We offer a high-end offer. We do a scorecard across our client base, and that's an up opportunity. If they just want tax returns, we have one price. And if they want the scorecard that we provide, there's a different level of service, so there's an upcharge for that. And our firm has to dictate it, sort of all that stuff. I haven't decided all that myself.
And as your client's accountant, how much of your role should be non-accounting stuff, like helping you find distribution channels, helping you, improve your brand? Like how much work do outside financial?
That's all that I do. I don't do any traditional accounting and tax for the wine industry. All I'm doing is consulting. I'm helping them improve their business outcomes. But in our firm, it depends on what you want to do. You can build a 100% advisory firm if that's what you want to do, or you can build a tax and bookkeeping firm. That's the beauty of what we're doing as accountants. In today's world, we can do whatever we want. But I think you need to be responsive. If you want to charge a higher price, you need to be responsive to what they really need, not what is it that I want to deliver, whether or not you want it. Here's what I got. I got a list of three things. And that's it. Taxes, financial statements, you know, and budgets, maybe.
And Jenny, at some point you didn't work with wineries. This is a niche that you picked at some point in your life. You've been doing it for 10 years now?
In 10 years. The firm picked it. I just found a firm that already had a niche. So I didn't build it. They had this already going.
Yeah. But so you could argue that after 10 years of dealing with 500 wineries, you know what things smell and look like, and you build a sixth sense for kind of understanding where they're going. But when you first get started in that niche, how did you even get started with consulting when you didn't, like, for example, you talked about the tasting room. Yeah. I never even would have thought about that's a factor in terms of how that affects my work. But how does someone that knows nothing about the industry get started with that stuff?
It's a really scary thing to come in especially as a redneck in wine country, coming from South Carolina where I grew up, and showing up in, you know, to me, what's the most terrifying industry, because you can't even pronounce a lot of the stuff they sell. It was a big deal for me, and I had a firm that wanted me to help them spread the word, and I was like, do you hear this accent? I mean, listen to me, I don't know anything about wine. I mean, you know, if it doesn't come in a box, I'm not drinking it. So what I actually did, believe it or not, is develop a training course. So what I did is took the knowledge that I had and figured out how to leverage that where I had common connections with this industry. And the common connection was accounting. I may not know wine, but I know numbers and accounting. And so I created a course called Demystifying Finance and Accounting in partnership with another company, a winery training company here. I wrote their finance class. I came up with some overlap, and I actually approached it from a, I don't know anything about wine, you don't know anything about financial stuff, let's bridge the communication gap and both get smarter. And so I taught that first class, totally terrified, and I said some things that they caught me on because I didn't have context and I didn't have stories about wineries, but by the second class I did, and that gave me comfort with the industry. And I asked a lot of dumb questions and I wasn't afraid to, because I said, you know, I don't know anything about wine, but this thing doesn't make sense to me that you're doing this. Tell me more about what you're doing with that and what, and oh my God. And so curiosity is the secret, and don't be afraid to ask questions, because it serves you to, I think, not be an expert when you come into an industry and say, you know, I don't know anything about wine, but you know, I'm an accountant. And how long do you depreciate those barrels when you walk through on your tour? You know, they're showing you all this stuff, and I'm like, oh, what's the depreciation on those things? And you know, what's the recovery time on a vineyard and all that stuff? So you find something you can relate to, and you have to work from that. That's what worked for me.
That's brilliant. Like, I don't know anything about X industry, but I know numbers. Yeah. And both of us have to deal with numbers. So
yeah, you don't know my stuff. Oh my God. I don't know yours. Let's bridge the gap. Let's work from that and make this happen.
So. Yeah, I want to unpack a couple of things you said. So one... Yeah. Is you said that you were going to screw up the first time. That's normal. You're going to be embarrassed. You're going to say stupid things. They're going to call you out on it.
Yep.
That's just a fear you have to get over. That it's okay to do that. That's part of it, right?
If you can't overcome your fear, you're never going to get anywhere. You're never going to grow and learn.
Right, right. Yep. So it's like little kids, you know, like if you stop little kids from falling down, they're going to grow up thinking that there's a magical net around them, and they don't learn from it.
Yeah. That's right.
They have to hit themselves to know that it hurts to get hit.
Then touch the hot stove.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly. So in many ways, that's part of how humans are coded to learn. So I love that. The other thing I wanted to unpack here was you partner with another person that was an expert in the industry, but not necessarily expert in finance. And you leveraged each other's knowledge. And I'm sure that other person also learned from you, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we co-taught for a while. Yeah.
So you didn't pay them anything. You said, let's do this together.
They actually paid me to create a course. They were looking for somebody who, and I had a teaching background. I'd already done my own courses. So I'd done some things. So I already had those skills. And I was already thinking about writing this book about communication. So it was a bent that I had. And she was out looking for somebody. And we happened to fall together. And I had the perfect set of skills. And so we made this joint sort of commitment to do this. And we also used that class as a way to promote the CPA firm. So it was a sort of a joint venture thing.
It's a win-win. Yeah. So if you have someone watching this show or listening to the podcast and they're saying, yeah, I've been trying to get into the auto repair industry, whatever, just pick one.
But cannabis.
Cannabis, right.
Cannabis is a big one.
Yeah. Anything you wanted to get into and you know nothing about, like, how do you go about finding that partner in crime that will help you co-develop something? And even if they don't offer you money and you don't have reputation for being a teacher, like, is there any tips around there?
I think you can offer your services free. Just say, you know, I just want to learn about this. Let me do your books for a while. Let me help you get your accounting right. Let me take a look at what you have, maybe. And for me, that's how I learn an industry, is through the transactional flow. For me, if I can go into the software and follow the flow of information, I can get a really good handle on what's going on in the business. And I think most of us can do that. So offer to say, you know, you need help with your books. I'll be happy to do it for, you know, a couple months and see what I can learn. And you can educate me about some of the concepts, because I'd like to get really good at this. I guarantee you, you'll find a million people that are willing to take you up on that offer. And then you can learn, of course, from YouTube. I mean, there's a million classes right now on cannabis accounting for that industry, because it's a new one. It's a hot one. A lot of people are looking at. And, you know, there's dispensaries all over my area. I don't know about you and your world, Hector, but
not in Florida yet. No,
there's dispensaries all over California. There's one in Napa down the street. So, you know, these people don't necessarily have the accounting nailed. So it might be a great place to go. So anyway, there's always opportunities. The biggest thing we have to do is overcome our fear. And once we do that, it's all easy from there.
Okay. So that's the third thing I wanted to unpack, which I think you kind of said it there. And I'll say it in different words so you tell me what you think. The same advice we give to recent graduates that can't find a job because they have a chicken and an egg situation, right?
You need they don't have the experience.
You need a job for the experience. You don't have experience, that sort of thing. So anyone trying to get into a niche, whatever the niche, even if it's winery, they're going to compete with you, whatever. We're given the same advice, you know, do an internship somewhere, do the work for free, get somewhere, make a mistake, get over the fear that you're going to screw up and say something stupid, and that's okay. And you will learn it and you'll be fine. Ten years takes ten years.
That's right. My daughter's doing that right now. She went, moved down to LA to become a fashion stylist and interns, but interning for free for multiple months with a famous stylist. And she's learning all kinds of stuff about how to do it. And yeah, she doesn't know everything, but boy, is she getting the exposure. And that's what you do.
Yeah,
you start something new and you figure out how to go where you know you're going to screw up. They know you're going to screw up and they're not paying you. So it's not costing them anything, provided you don't, you know, tank their entire business.
And going back to public speaking, that is kind of a way to get over your fear of screwing it up. Is, hey, they're not paying me to speak anyways. If I screw it up, whatever.
Right? You know, that's one of the things I try not to do. I try to treat every engagement like they're paying me $1 million. But for me, the overcoming the fear is to do the thing that you fear the most. And for me, that was doing stand-up comedy. I took stand-up comedy training, and that's how I overcame the fear. Nothing was as scary as that.
But that's now, Jenny. You know, when you first did stand-up comedy, whatever it was, you know, like you went to a bar somewhere. Yeah. Well, okay. We got the class, right? But the thing, most stand-up comedians, for example, they don't charge anything. They just go to the club to try their jokes, right?
They do open mics.
Yeah. Open mics. Exactly. So it's kind of like, you know.
Yeah. There's less risk if you're not letting somebody down who's paying you. Yeah. It's horrifying, but that's how you overcome. That's how you do anything, right? You stick yourself, put yourself out there. You fail a few times and then you never do that same thing again. That's what we learn from our failures.
All right.
Avoid it the next time.
So. And we just passed the 30-minute mark, so I said I wouldn't hold you up for more than that. Let's just let's bring it back to your book and the topic that we were talking about, how to make a boring topic interesting.
Boring subject to interesting.
Boring subject. Is that an Amazon or is there a place?
It's on Amazon, Amazon has the Basset Hound on the cover. That's my marketing brand.
I'm definitely gonna get it right now. I'm making sure it's Amazon Prime today. Prime Day, maybe there's
That's a right. offer. Kindle is cheaper.
Give us a couple of nuggets of knowledge from there. So you said there's 52 ways to make a boring subject interesting.
Yeah.
Let's start with talking about basic accounting to small business owners that know nothing about accounting. Give me some icebreakers.
Well, the first thing these are techniques. So the first thing I would do is understand your audience. If you're presenting accounting information to a fast-moving, short attention span CEO, your main thing to do is to use a visual. So find a picture, find a dashboard tool, find an interactive dashboard tool like Fathom, and present the information that way. Do not hand them a black and white spreadsheet with 500 rows and columns and 5,000 tabs and drag them through every number. Give them the highlights and expect to spend about 5 minutes max and condense everything you say to fit into that 5 minutes. So it's understanding your audience and adapting how you communicate the information so that they can best relate to it. So if you're speaking to another accountant, then go for the spreadsheets. But if you're talking to a salesperson or a CEO, forget the spreadsheets, give them a picture, a summary. And then if they want the spreadsheets, you can bring that in, but only when they request more details.
So keep it sort of on the backhand.
Yeah.
The spreadsheet and the KPIs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So what about if I'm speaking in a group of, let's say, a B&I type of place? Like a networking group where there's some self-employed, like what's a good icebreaker there?
Main goal is to make them curious. So I always say I make boring stuff interesting. I do stand-up comedy to do that. And that leaves them completely curious and then have to come up to me and find out what the heck I'm talking about. That's how you do it.
You start with jokes. Just to be clear.
I do not tell a joke ever.
Oh, okay.
I say that. I make boring stuff interesting. Well, here's what I do. I make boring stuff interesting and I do a lot of nerdy stuff with accounting and tech.
Okay. And
you'll find me. And they all come up afterwards and want to know more about that. How do I do that? What does that mean? All that stuff.
What about improv comedy? So you talk about stand-up comedy. Is improv comedy also something you're
doing? I do improv. Improv is a much better tool for being fast on your feet. So if you're in sales, improv is a great training tool. It's about listening and interacting. Stand-up is about communicating from you to them. Very different skills, both extremely powerful and valuable.
Interesting. So improv to learn interacting, negotiation, that sort of thing.
Fast on your feet stuff, being responsive in the sales situation. And stand-up is about going on a stage and presenting. Very different skills.
And where do you go about learning just comedy in general? Like,
go on your local site and look for it. That's what I did. I was in Atlanta, went on site, went stand-up comedy training, found a guy, a comedian who trained, did a six-week class. Graduation at the Punchline in Atlanta on stage.
Just curious, how much you pay for that class, if you remember?
I don't even remember. This was in 2001. I don't remember.
A couple hundred bucks?
Yeah, not much at all. Yeah.
And what was the time commitment?
It was one night a week for 6 weeks. It was about 4 hours a time, and we had about 20 people, and everybody started from zero and ended up being funny on stage. It was amazing.
But not everybody's funny. But
everybody can be made funnier, and it was amazing to see that. 20 people, none of them seemed like they were going to be funny at the beginning, and by the end, we were all funny. It was a masterful teacher. And there are skills that you can learn. That was the biggest gift. Even comedy can be learned.
Why is that? Is it because you know the audience, you can use their pain points, you can use the environment? How does someone that doesn't know and understand comedy do these things?
Well, you have to have a bent. I mean, humor, you have to have a perspective where you are aware. I mean, if you're totally dry and you don't think anything is funny and you don't laugh at stuff, then that's not your way. Find another way. But I've always enjoyed comedy. I've always been sort of, you know, looking for the humorous in things. And what you learn in comedy is to play off of whatever you've got. And in my case, it was easier to do comedy being a redneck in California than it was to be a redneck in Atlanta. Because so what, you know? And so moving out to California gave me something to play with. So I make fun of myself. So you learn how to, you just learn the process. Some tips and tricks about how to take what you're trying to communicate and make it funnier. And so again, that's part of what led to the book. Some of the things I learned from stand-up are here. But some of the other things from doing a million free speeches all over the place, you figure out what works, what doesn't. You figure out how to get people's attention and how to, you know, have the impact. If that is your goal, then you need to get trained somehow. And stand-up has worked for me, but it may not be anybody else's preferred way to get there. But there are lots of tools, Toastmasters, lots of other things that you can do to get better.
Okay, so you mentioned Toastmasters.
Yeah.
Are there any other things? Like Toastmasters is the only one that I know, but that's organizations where you can be a nice one of them because you always have to present. What else?
Yeah, there's a great tool that I just learned about called Video Social, and it's basically they call themselves Toastmasters for creating videos. You go to this sort of chat group. There's a group of about 5 people, I think, in these chats online. You create a 2-minute video within a group, and the group gives you feedback on your video, and then you can post it. So if you want to go to become a YouTube video person and you're afraid to, this might be a supportive way to make that happen. So it's videosocial.net is the group. So there are things like that. Just go look. I mean, there's a million sources now of training and information and skills. I read a lot of books on speaking when I decided I wanted to do this before I took the stand-up training.
And video socials. I found it. Video socials with an S.
Yeah, with an S. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's like, it's this really cool concept where you come into the support group and he helps you get in a rhythm of creating videos, 2-minute videos, and you practice and you get feedback.
And a 1-minute summary, why is public speaking such an important skill set for anyone in the business world today?
So I think clear communication is the critical skill. Whether you go on a big stage or a small stage or across the table from somebody, it's being able to effectively resonate with that human being to empower them to be successful and to get the value that you deserve as an expert at something. As a human being that has unique knowledge and skills, communication is what limits our ability to receive the value that I think we deserve. And so I think it's critical that we can connect with other people so they appreciate the knowledge that we have.
And with that, how important is it to have a very clear way to state what we do, our own positioning statement? How important is that?
Extremely critical. The most critical thing we can do when we try to get out there is to know what we want to do, what story we want to tell about ourselves, and who it is we want to work with. And I think that's key.
All right. Perfect, Jenny. So let's wrap it up here. Thank you so much for all your advice, how to make a boring subject interesting.
There you go. Got it.
Got it this time. I just bought it. It's on Amazon Prime. It's Fantastic. Good deal.
Thank you.
And I know you do some consulting indirectly with other accounting professionals. Can you give me a 30-second elevator pitch of what is it that you do there?
I do a lot of coaching of people who want to improve their speaking. I'm actually working with Madeline Pratt and Misty Mejia to create a speaker training class. We get a lot of requests for help, and so we're launching that shortly. And I also work with tech companies who want to get their message out in a more resonating way to reach accountants and business people, so I do that. And I have had CPA firms reach out to me for help just telling their story or figuring out what their story is. It's all through evenanerd.com. That's my website.
Okay, so that's how the people
contact. That's how they find me. Yep.
Yeah. And what is the number one most common advice you're giving other accounting professionals to overcome their fears and do really what they want to do?
Embrace who you are. That's the biggest thing I can tell you. Work from who you naturally, normally, and fully are. And if you live in that and come from that space without fear and without shame, and you are who you are, you'll be successful. People will be drawn to you.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Evenanerd.com, right?
That's right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Hector. Bye-bye. Yeah.